Welcome back into the Red Zone Podcast. My name is Colton Bartholomew, UW football beat reporter here for the Wisconsin State Journal. And we have a very special episode for you guys today. We have our first player interview here on the show. Or I guess I should say first since I took over in September of 2019. So first one in a long time. We have Jake Ferguson, tight end for the Badgers, on the show. Jim and I got about 20 minutes with Jake, and it was great. I'm excited for you guys to hear it. Lots of good stuff about the tight end room, the energy of spring practices right now, what he's focusing on as a veteran player, some good stories about Mickey Turner, the tight ends coach, and then obviously very little bit at the end about his grandfather, Barry Alvarez, retiring, and just what he might be doing once retirement hits late in June there. So after the Jake Ferguson interview, we went into a mailbag. We took the questions from you guys on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you very much for sending those in. And Jim and I answered those. We talk about the basketball team looking to get some transfers, football team possibly getting a transfer to what the offensive line looks like, outside linebackers, a lot of different positions on the football team, and then the Brad Davison news about him coming back as well. So lots of stuff to get into in this podcast, and we're going to do with that right after this. All right, we are back with our first player guest ever. We have Jake Ferguson, tight end for the Wisconsin Badgers. Jake, thanks for jumping on the show, man.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm real excited to be here. Excited to be the first player guest. I think that's awesome. I'm fireable.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So I want to start with some business stuff here first, because I'm not going to lie to you, Jake. I was very surprised when I saw that tweet from you. It was I think it was early January, where you said you were coming back to Wisconsin this year. You had the opportunity to go to the NFL. What was it about Wisconsin and where you're at in your career that made you say you wanted to come back?
Yeah, I mean, I got that a lot, definitely right after that announcement. But, I mean, I think it came down to just not being finished yet. I mean, I grew up in Madison. I grew up a Badger. I mean, I was a part of the tradition. And I think after that last year, 2020 being, I mean, everything that it was, just a cruddy year. But, yeah, I just felt like I wasn't finished yet. And, I mean, there's something special with coming in and leaving with the guys that you came in with that same class. So just talking to some of the O-linemen that I came in with, Beach, Bress, Seltzner, those guys, we thought we had something really special, and we know that we can do something special. So I think I really wanted to see what we were capable of, and I knew that I could do it. And I said, why not? Why not this year? I mean, might as well go out with a bang. Can't end on 2020. So I think it was just the right decision for me, the team, and my family. I'm just not ready for me to leave Badger football quite yet. So
Jake, how'd you share the news with your coaches and teammates? I'm curious, was there anything formal? Was it low key? And was there, you know, our reaction was surprise. Were they surprised?
Well, I mean, I kind of knew, even after like the Mayo Bowl, guys would be like walking around, and I mean, just something we do after our last game of those seniors, like, hey, it was an honor playing with you. I mean, like, some guys would come up to me and be like, hey, it was an honor. No, man, I'm coming back. I don't know what you're talking about. And they're like, oh yeah, all right, good. And I'm like, yeah. So I kind of knew. So I mean, most of it came out back like early around then. And I mean, thanks to those guys for not saying anything, but still, I mean, yeah, it was more of just letting everybody else know. But I told those guys, it's not over yet. We're going to work. Let's go. So,
yeah, that's fair. You were pretty close to the vest with it throughout the season, though, because I know you got to ask a couple of times, especially leading up to the bowl. And you mentioned talking to, like, Beach and Bruss and some of the other guys that were in your class. I've got to imagine that's kind of a tough thing, because you don't want to put undue influence on somebody and be like, oh, you got to come back, and people got to make their own decisions. But it sounds like you guys are kind of collaborative, like, hey, we think if we're all back, we can do something here.
Right, for sure. And I mean, I think it was just a collective as a group just being like, hey, we can really do this. But then at the same time, there's guys in my class like Adam Bay, who I was really close with, one of my guys. And I mean, I really wanted him to stay as a friend, but at the same time, dude, he's got a shot. You got to take it.
Right.
I think that's the best for him, and I'm proud of him. But I mean, for those who stayed and those who are still here in that class, I think we can do something special for sure.
Spring practice going on right now, Jake. You know, we were just talking about this before. We had a little mailbag with readers asking questions, and spring's always a little bit weird, right? Because you're so far away from the season, you're so far away from an actual opponent. You're a veteran guy. You've been through this a ton. Does it get old at all?
I mean, a little bit, not so much, but I mean, like I said, I haven't really said, but 50% of our team hasn't even had a spring ball. So a lot of these guys don't really know like what's going on as much. And I mean, they're still kind of getting in the rhythm and how, we're not really playing for a game on Saturday, and you're playing, it's a marathon, that spring ball, and it is a time for you to improve on your craft. And I think a lot of these young guys are doing that, and you can see it. I mean, we got a group right now that isn't like improving, and you can clearly see it day by day, whether it's an old guy who's been out there or if it's a young guy who's, it's his sixth practice. But it's really cool to watch. But yeah, I mean, it's good to just be playing football again back in spring ball. I mean, having a good time with the guys, learning, just being able to be with each other. It's good.
Are you, same kind of follow-up. Go ahead.
Quick follow-up. Do you kind of embrace being a mentor? I mean, obviously that's a role that you're in now. I mean, it seems, the way you're talking, it seems like it's something you kind of enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, I like teaching what I know. And I mean, watching the success of other tight ends especially fires me up. Whether it's Eschenbach making a big time catch in practice, or I mean, him catching the little 5-yard route against Indiana last year because I was out working on my shoulder. I mean, that fires me up. And I know we can be really good. So I love teaching those guys. Those guys have a huge ceiling, and they're not even close. But they're getting good, and they can definitely make an impact now. And I mean, like I said, it is so fun to watch those dudes improve. And like where they, if you go back and where they started, and they'll tell you, I mean, even myself, if you go back, watch our first practices, we're getting thrown by dudes. Guys are twisting us and throwing us off. And now, I mean, pretty much everybody right now, even Jack Pewitt with his 6 practices down. I mean, you can see he's getting down, starting to look like a real tight end. But it's really cool to watch, and I love doing what I can. And I mean, they still help me out sometimes. It's kind of bounces back and forth for sure.
Yeah, Coach Chris kind of mentioned that, especially with older guys, he tells you find one or two things, make 3 at the max each spring session to really focus in on and try to hone and get better. What are those things for you this season? Because I gotta imagine when you've had the career that you've had, like, you can really fine tune, like, hey, I've got to get better at, you know, these one or two things, and really kind of just focus all your attention to those.
Right. I mean, like a couple of years, or yeah, I guess 2 years ago, that was really big for me in spring ball. And I mean, I tell those guys just come in with one thing to fix. And now I think for me, it's just being consistent as a whole. But also like off the field stuff, like taking care of my body, just making sure I'm 100% going. I mean, and like that, I think I have gotten a lot better at that, whether I'm sitting in the ice cold for 7 minutes to my shoulders and just my hands out. And then, I mean, just little stuff like that. And then I think on the field, it's more just consistency. But I think I'm making some pretty good strides for sure.
I think you had the quote of the year last year when you were talking about needing to get good weight, when you said it was all pizza and light beer going into 2020 or 2019. So are you still on that? Are you off? Is that out of the diet right now?
I'm out of that diet. Yeah.
That's good to hear.
That diet probably lasted about a week before Coach Turner got mad at me. But yeah, I'm probably about like 245 of, I mean, to be a tight end, you got to eat a little dirty sometimes. Sure. But yeah, I'm not on the beer and pizza anymore.
Mickey ever does Mickey ever show film of himself playing? Like, as kind of here's how you do it. Yeah, he does. Okay.
So he'll show it for sure, but he won't say it's him. You have to, I'll be sitting there and I'll kind of chuckle and he'll figure out that I saw him. And like, I'll be like, hey, that was a good block. And he just will start laughing behind us. But yeah, there's a couple times he'll show us, but there's one like recently, we've been having these team meetings where we do this little stuff. And like, you see old pictures of old coaches and I keep teasing, I'm going to put this one picture of him where he's a little bit chubbier and he's all got his gear on. But no, I mean, it's awesome. And then you go back, he still does great stuff on his film. And like, we use all his film today. But yeah, it's still pretty funny for sure.
I want to stick with that for a second, because it seems like in your guys' tight end room, there are some characters like yourself, Rucci. I've talked to him a few times. He's a funny dude. Eschenbach, like you mentioned before, just what's the dynamic like in there? Is it like tough to get you guys reined in and doing work? Because it seems like you guys all like to joke around and have fun.
Yeah, I mean, we're a pretty close-knit group. I mean, and we all love to have fun. And I think our group, we're playing our best ball when we're all having fun. And that's just the truth. But I think a lot of it is we also know when to lock it down. We know that it's not all fun and games. And then when you step between the lines, it's time to go. And I think that's what's strong about our group and what makes our group pretty special this year. And I think we're a really tight-knit group. Even Jack Pugh, he's a funny kid. I mean, just coming in, you can tell sometimes, I mean, freshmen are going to be shy, but once we broke his shell, I mean, he fits right in. He's going to be good. And you can tell he's just a natural athlete. I mean, he's getting stuff right in the meeting rooms. He's starting to answer questions correctly. And it fires us up. And like, we're all backing him up. So it's fun. It's definitely a good group to be in at Wisconsin for sure.
You mentioned Jack Eschenbach before and how excited you are about him and some of the stuff he does. What should people know about him?
He's a freak. He is the fastest tight end I've ever seen. I mean, from where he has come, his freshman year is mind blowing. I wouldn't trust him to block anybody his freshman year. It was bad. And now he's just like, it is crazy. He came back after that spring when we were like locked up for a while, and he had blown up, and he was like, he couldn't get, so up until then he couldn't get past like 230 pounds. And then he finally blew up and was like 245, looked huge and still could run fast. And now he's just, I mean, coming in, working on little things, and now he's just chipping it away. And he's starting to become a really good, versatile tight end. And it's really fun to watch him. And he's so funny too. At the end of yesterday's practice, he had a big, really big contested catch, got up and was like flexing, and all the tight ends were juiced. It was just a good way to end practice, but he's definitely making strides and he's going to be good for sure.
I gotta tell you, Jake, when I watch practice, I forget. I can't tell sometimes if I don't look very clearly at the number, if it's you or him. So that's probably more of a compliment to him coming from where he was just more of a blocker the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he can do it all now. So it's awesome for sure.
And you've talked about the younger guys in your group, like Jack Pugh and in the past, Clay Cundiff, Cam Large, all these guys. Seems like there's a lot of competition because, you know, you're at the number one spot there. And then, you know, Jack and Rucci have been in that number two. Just what is it like when you watch these young guys competing? Because you see it at spring practice, like, you know, Jack makes a big catch down the middle. Somebody else wants to do it the next time. Just what's it like for you as a veteran guy kind of seeing all that?
Right. It almost doesn't feel like competition. It just feels like a group of tight ends are like, heck, just throw out four tight ends. We don't like, you know what I mean? Whether it be we're down on receivers or down on fullbacks, we can, I mean, that's what's great about our group is those guys are working so hard on the field and in the playbook that they can go fill in for a receiver, go fill in for a fullback. And I mean, just being that versatile is going to get you on the field. And whether it be one, I'm the only tight end or there's four other guys out there. I mean, just being able to do that is awesome. And those guys are taking it to heart so that they can get out on the field. And you can tell that they're working. I just feel bad for Coach Turner. I mean, I don't know how you choose that. I mean, those guys, it's constant. Like, those guys are just working. And they're, I mean, they're, you can tell they're improving. And good luck.
I always thought if there's a 14 formation, it was going to happen at Wisconsin, right? Like,
Oh yeah. If it'll happen, it'll happen this year. I'll tell you that right now.
Can you guys play running back? Seems like that the offense needs a couple guys back there.
I keep whispering to Coach Chris the little Brett Favre 0-4 package. only tight ends. We'll see, though.
I like it.
Jake, you, a lot of you guys have said that the chemistry is better this year, and there's obvious reasons for that. Last year was so weird that, you know, you were restricted on how much time you could spend together off the field and stuff like that. Just how different was that last year, and how much of a challenge was it to build chemistry when so much was taken away in terms of that bonding type stuff?
Yeah, it was really, honestly, it was really hard. Just, I mean, being away from the guys that you're going to go on basically go to battle with. I mean, you're not with them for half the year. You're not working out with them, grinding with them. It definitely makes a difference. But I think this year it's just completely changed. Guys are taking advantage of just being around everybody. We're staying in the locker room a little bit longer just to hang out with guys. The tunes are turned up all the way at all times in the locker room. I mean, it's good. It's good energy at all times. And I mean, just getting back to how it used to be, just kind of that feel of normalcy. It just feels good. And just being around those guys that you love, doing the thing that you love nothing beats it, you know? So I think just being out of that funk is really big for us.
Who controls the music in the locker room? I would think as one of the elder statesmen, you get some say in that, do you?
Oh, yeah, we try to say no freshmen, but they've kind of taken that out. But I don't know why. I don't know. I'll have like country going in the morning, and then all of a sudden it'll switch. But I mean, it's a funny dynamic going on in there in the music iPad. But it'll switch up. It'll switch up for sure.
I've appreciated the last couple of days, or last couple of times we've been to practice, all the DMX, respecting the legend there.
We had to.
Getting back to the camaraderie thing, though, because Isaac Rendo actually talked about this when we talked to him the other day, just not being able to lift with dudes, like you guys having to be one person to a rack and like all spread out and like everything like that. Just from like exercising A stinks, and then I'm sure that the amount of weightlifting you guys have to do, and as difficult as it is, not having that partner there, not having that encouragement, I've got to imagine it was tough to hit the numbers you guys wanted to.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you can't even hit a big number, you're getting up like, okay. But yeah, it was rough. I mean, not being able, like I said, it eats at you. It almost kind of like drains you a little bit more, but, I think this off season we made it work with what we had. Just had to juice it up a little bit more. Had to get some guys screaming a little bit more. but yeah, I mean, that's what was good about this off season. We were like, whatever happens, man, we're just gonna adapt and evolve, just make it work. So I think that was powerful too, and that helped a ton.
Jake, you and Graham Mertz clearly had a really good connection last year. How does that process even work? Like, how do you develop chemistry with a quarterback, especially the way last season played out, where, you know, Jack Cohn got hurt and then Graham comes in as the starter? I'm just curious about the process there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just starts with practice. So like this spring, first practice, I mean, Graham and I, off the field we click. I mean, we're buddies. And then on the field, I mean, like the first two balls or so, I had a wrong route, or didn't hit my route how I wanted to, came back to Graham and was like, all right, that's on me. Like, it'll be, next route will be perfect how I want it. And then same thing happens. He'll loft one. Maybe it'll go over my head or something. I'll knock it down, hit it with one hand or whatever. He'll be like, all right, that's on me. And that's it. Then we're clicking from there. And I think that's just who he is. That's just who I kind of am. Just making it right so the other person has it a little bit easier. And I think that's just what made our connection that strong. And I think that's why we're just keep on building on it, keep on making it stronger. Just the trust between us is definitely strong.
Jake, I find that really interesting, just thinking about the position Graham's in, because I think there's a segment of the fan base that's unfair with what they expect from Graham. Like, they expect him to be perfect. And of course, his first start, he goes out and he almost is perfect. And you're a guy that kind of went that through that yourself. I mean, coming in here with your family and everything, a lot of eyes were on you. And just how do you think he handles all that stuff? Because it seems like he's always got a good attitude. Guys have talked about it. He's always going around the locker room. Just, do you think he's able to kind of separate, you know, maybe that segment of the fan base from, you know, the majority that just wants him to be good?
Yeah, I don't know how he did it. I mean, I couldn't imagine being an 18-year-old going into college, having pretty much almost the entire fan base saying, hey, you got to win the Heisman.
Yeah, and right.
Even some of them saying, you got to do it this year. Like, all right. Like, come on. The dude's still a kid. But I think he's handled it really well. And I think he's had a good group of guys with him that have been able to pick him up if he was down. But yeah, I think he's handled it really well. And he's done about the best anybody could do with all that pressure on his back. But I think it also fuels him. I mean, he's just that kind of kid that, all right, let's go. Then I'm going to win the Heisman. You know what I mean? Like, go get it, Graham. And he's the kid that can do it. So, I think he's done a great job handling it, but also he uses that as fuel for sure. And you can kind of see it a little bit.
Gotcha.
Going off script. Right. I'm going off script here quick, yeah, but I just noticed this, Jake, is that your sweatshirt that you're wearing right now could have come straight out of Paul Chris' closet.
I actually took this out of the Don's closet.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
Via the Adidas right there. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I didn't even notice that. Wow.
I have one of his old throwback windbreakers that I stole. I think it was, yeah. I shouldn't.
Apex?
I have it, like, yeah.
Back in the day, they did Apex stuff, and yeah, Reebok, there was. Do you guys give Paul Chris, I mean, did you give Coach Chris any grief about his basic clothing, for lack of a better word?
That's his swag. You got to let it be. I've got a couple sweatshirts like that. It just says Badgers with nothing else. Huh. But yeah, that's his swag. You got to let it happen.
That's who he is.
That makes sense. All right. You mentioned the Don. We're going to ask you one question because of, you know, what happened last week with him retiring. I liked your tweet saying, telling him to go relax and grab a gin and tonic. Jim and I have talked about this, you know, offline. What is Barry Alvarez going to do in retirement? Because it seems like he loves working. He loves doing what he's been doing. Just what do you think he's going to do now that he's going to retire?
He'll get his work in somehow for sure. Whether it's on the golf field or the golf course or texting me or something. But I mean, he's always working. He loves it. Or he obviously will be chilling in Naples with a gin and tonic. So, I mean, he definitely earned it. He definitely earned his time off. But yeah, I mean, it is definitely going to be weird for sure.
Makes sense, man. All right, Jake, one last question for you. Just when you look at what you guys have this season and what you guys are building right now in spring ball, just what level of excitement are you at for this group and this 2021 season?
It's really exciting. I mean, just the idea to even get back to normalcy, but also just the feeling that we do have this really special group. We do got all the right pieces in all the right places. It's exciting. But I mean, at the same time, it's spring ball. We just got to take it day by day, keep stacking the days. I think that's the most important thing. But yeah, it's you can definitely feel the energy starting to rise up, and it's not plateauing. It's just going up. So it's really exciting.
Absolutely. All right, Jake. Well, thank you so much for joining the show here, taking some time out of your day. I know it's been a busy week and everything like that. So thank you so much. And, hopefully we can do this again sometime, maybe in the summer.
Awesome. Yeah. Hey, thanks for having me.
All right. And we are back with Jim Polzine. We're going to answer some of your guys' questions here in the mailbag. Jim, we got one that I know that both of us are pretty interested in to start with. This is from Jory Mama on Twitter. How active are the Badgers really in the transfer portal, or do they still believe more in player development? And I think this is important, or an interesting question for both programs that we cover pretty exclusively here. I'll start with football. Not very. And I thought they were going to be this season. I thought they were going to be a lot more. there have been reports about, you know, a couple of receivers that they've gone after and a running back or two that they've gone after. But obviously, you know, the only one that's committed to coming in is Isaac Townsend from Oregon. So the defensive end. So I don't think that they've been pushing as hard as maybe I thought they would. And I think that says to me, they believe a lot in the freshmen that they've got coming in, and maybe it's not going to lead to wins in 2021, but I think they don't want to put somebody in front of one of these guys right away and potentially miss out on a chance for one of them to break through in camp and earn some roles.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit different in basketball. I think, you know, it's always difficult. Like they have kicked the tires in previous years on transfers, and sometimes with success, sometimes without success. And I think this year they're probably more active than usual, but being more active doesn't necessarily mean you can close a deal. And there's a lot of reasons for that. You know, it takes two to tango there. It requires the other person to say yes. And I think they've been pretty far down the road with a couple players, and those players have chose to go elsewhere for various reasons. I think sometimes too, you'll see this there, Wisconsin's name gets attached to someone, and it's always difficult, at least from my perspective, to figure out what's real and what's not.
Sure.
If they make a call or send an email, you know, that I suppose means that they're interested in someone, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're offering someone or that they really, really want. I mean, a lot of times they're just, like I said before, they're kicking the tires and they're seeing, you know, is the kid even open to coming to Wisconsin? What's the academic transcript look like? I think people forget that that's a huge part of this process, especially at Wisconsin, is you need to have someone that, you know, you can get into school and get into the program. And then, you know, it's you're looking for a right fit too. And I, you know, I think I spelled out in that story after the season that, you know, there are basically, as I see it, and, you know, Greg Gard has not said this, but as someone who covers a team sees it, there's three pretty big needs. Experience in the backcourt, you know, a scorer/playmaker type to complement Jonathan Davis, and, you know, some experience in the front court, especially, you know, at center where they're really young and not very deep. I don't know what I expected coming into the offseason in terms of if they would check one box, two box, three boxes, zero boxes. It's just so hard to predict it every year. And here we are, you know, 3 weeks into the offseason and they haven't gotten anybody. I think there's still time. I think it's a fluid situation and I wouldn't rule out the fact that they're going to add somebody yet, but it's such a complicated process. And I know fans look at other schools adding transfers every day and wonder why Wisconsin can't do that. I would just say they're a little more thorough probably than most schools in terms of what they look for and what they ultimately can get. And then, like I said, it takes the other guy saying yes.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. The culture hasn't been established yet here in Wisconsin that, you know, this is a place that guys that transfer in have had success before. And maybe Micah Potter is a good start for that. Maybe that's going to be something that can the basketball program can build off of. I mean, football, you look at Colin Wilder, he looks like he's going to be a guy that starts at safety this year. But, you know, that's 3 years after his transfer. You know, some guys might not have that patience and have that desire to work your way up like that. And I think too, and Jim and I are recording this Wednesday afternoon, it looks like the one-time transfer is getting past as early as tomorrow, right? So maybe that changes the attitude Wisconsin has to transfers as a whole, just the openness that's going to be starting, you know, not tomorrow, but in the next few months here when this rule gets officially, you know, passed and enacted. I mean, everybody's going to have a chance to transfer without sitting out, and maybe that changes an attitude or two to get bringing transfers in.
I do think Greg Gard's more open to it, at least based on my conversation with him 3 weeks ago or so, that he seemed more open to it. He understands that this is not going away, that the transfer portal is, you know, here to stay, and it's going to become a big part of roster building, and I think he's open to that. But I don't think he's ever going to, you know, turn his back on fit and culture and all that. And then I think the other thing that complicates this year, you know, know, on one hand, this is probably the year where they have more need for it than ever of adding a couple of guys that will help a young roster next year. On the flip side, we're still in the middle of a pandemic where players can't visit campus and you can't really get to know them in person. And again, that's a big, it's a big hurdle to get over for a place like Wisconsin that really values building relationships in the recruiting process and getting to know, you know, so much about the player they're recruiting and hoping that the player gets to know more and more about them. It's just, it's a difficult year to be going into a season where you really need to add a lot of pieces, because I just think it's challenging and you run the risk of bringing in the wrong fit.
No, absolutely. And we had another question from Megan on Twitter. She asked about Brad Davison. He kind of answered that question for us this morning, announcing that he was going to come back. Then she also asked about how likely it is to bring in a veteran transfer. And you just kind of laid out the positions there. But if you had to say, like, what do you think is the most likely scenario? What would you say is the most likely between that somebody in the backcourt, that slasher scorer type, or a big man coming in for Wisconsin on the transfer market?
I think a big man is the more likely, and I don't have any real specific information or names to offer, but I do think I think you need some size and experience up there to spell guys like Steven Krall, who I think is really going to be a good player, but is, you know, very inexperienced and probably still needs some work in the weight room. And Ben Carlson too. Like, you know, you don't really have a lot at the five spot right now in terms of experience or depth. And so I think that's probably the major need. I think Brad Davison coming back to some degree checks off a couple boxes all in once. He can play point guard, which you need experience there. So I think he's a guy that can spell the young point guards. He does give you some scoring and, you know, I think he'll be able to complement Johnny Davis a little bit. So, you know, I think you get experience just in general and leadership. So I think he does check off some boxes there that, you know, if you brought in a different type of transfer, maybe that doesn't accomplish as many things.
Sure. All right. So let's move on to the next question here. We'll stick with some football ones and we'll wrap up with a basketball one. This is from Steve on Twitter. What do you think the current outside linebacker depth chart is? I feel like there might be some of the best young talent on the team out there right now. Nick Herbig, Kaden Johnson, Aaron Witt, Spencer Lytle. And then there are veterans like Noah Burks, Isaiah Green-May, and CJ Getz. I would say right now, when you look at the spring practice rotation, you're going to have Burks and Herbig as your top group. I mean, the talent that Herbig showed, and then just the steady hand and the experience that Burks brings. There's talk about him, you know, having one kind of a breakout year and being more of a playmaker. I'll believe it when I see it. He's a solid player. I think he deserves a start given what they have seen so far on the field from what they have. But I do think that that's a spot that we could see a little bit more rotation, especially in pass downs coming up this year. But you've got Herbig there that you're pretty sure is going to be your field outside linebacker. And I've said it a few times, but he was basically just doing what he did last year on talent and speed and just a tenacity. I think he's had some time now to learn the system and actually learn some more technique, how to get around Big Ten tackles, big time difference between what he saw last season and what he saw in high school. So I think that's your number one and two. And then I think when you get to that three and four spot, it gets really interesting because in spring, it's just been who's healthy. You know, those guys are out there. I mean, TJ Bowers, an early freshman, was in the second group on Saturday, or excuse me, on Tuesday, because a lot of guys were hurt. But I think when you get to, you know, if everybody's healthy, I think you've got to throw Aaron Witt there at the boundary side. And then I think Spencer Lytle is playing well enough and has been earning his stripes the last few years to be that other guy. If a Kaden Johnson or maybe one of these younger guys like TJ Bowers, like I mentioned, or some of the freshmen that are coming in that can earn that second role, I'd be surprised just because there's a lot of belief in what Lytle's doing. That's where I would see the top four right now.
Yeah, and so much of this will depend too on the rest of spring and then the summer session. There's a long time between now and August when they, you know, start training camp for these guys to get better, not only like physically better in the weight room, but so much of it depends on how much these guys spend away from, you know, just in the film room and stuff where they can, you know, mentally get better and more prepared. And then that stuff shows when they get back on the field in August. So a lot of these young guys, you look at this group and it's an exciting young group, right? I mean, I think probably if you look position by position on this roster, outside linebacker is the one that stands out to you in terms of just young talent. And I'm excited to see what they can do. They've got some pretty good, they've got the makings of some pretty good depth there, I think.
Yeah. And I should say Getz has been, was in that second group, him and Lytle kind of moving in and out, depending on who's healthy. I don't want to not mention him because I think he gives them a level of strength against tackles and in the run game that they just don't really have elsewhere, just with his size and his, you know, just physical strength. I think he's probably the strongest guy in the group. So I want to throw his name in there as well. All right, let's jump into Bruce's question here. He said he's interested in diving into the defensive end position. Lost two starters, injuries impacting spring practice. Matt Henningsen's coming back. You got Bryson Williams getting some reps. No, they expect pressure from offensive linemen, but the run defense suffered a few years back when they didn't have the depth at defensive end. He has concerns. I think that's fair, given what we've seen so far. And it's tough because you've got Bryson Williams, who's been hurt pretty much all spring practice, and Keanu Benton, same thing. So they're putting defensive ends at nose tackle. And, you know, Mike Jarvis, who's an early enrollee freshman at nose tackle, he's just trying to survive. You know, he's just learning, and it doesn't look great right now when you watch the defensive line at practice. But I will say the reps that I've seen Matt Henningsen, especially in one-on-one pass rush, Isaiah Mullins, I think, is a name that people need to start remembering a little bit more when we talk about the defensive end position, because he really saved them rotation-wise last year after Henningsen got hurt. And I think he's going to be able to step up, and I don't know how many flash plays, how many sacks you're going to see from him, but he's going to be one of those kind of old school 3-4 defensive ends that's eating up a bunch of blocks and you just can't move them off the line. So I don't know if I have concerns about the defensive ends. I know you don't have a ton of depth there, but the top guys, as they've shown, as long as they can stay healthy, I think you've got enough guys that you're going to be okay. Not going to be dominant position by far, I don't think, but enough that you're not going to be saying, oh, the defensive line's killing us.
Right. We've said this before too, but they run so much stuff out of like the, you know, they run so much nickel that when you only have two defensive linemen on the field, you can get away with a lack of depth to some degree there, because they do spend so much time, you know, in not in their base defense. So, but you would like to see some of the guys, like Isaiah Mullins is a guy that intrigues me. And if he can step up and be someone you can count on, I think that would be huge.
Yeah. And I'm, you made a great point about nickel, because Jim Leonard said about 70% of the snaps last year were out of nickel. I think you've got to get some snaps in that two lineman set from Keanu Benton or Bryson Williams. Not that it's going to be the greatest matchup, but I just think that to have a guy that's as physically imposing and as special athletically as Keanu Benton, and then say, we're only going to play him a third of the snaps, that just doesn't really quite jive. And I know he's got to learn how to do it. And I asked Jim Leonard about it last year, and he mentioned about all the techniques he's got to learn. And, you know, nose tackle, you can play with a lot more just brute force and power, and you've got to be a little bit more tactful with what you do. I think that's somebody that's got to be a big factor at end next year, because just having him off the field, you're not putting your best 11 out there. And that's what they always talk about. All right, let's jump into Richard's question. He says, what are your thoughts on the changes in the offensive line this spring? It's a good question, because I found it very interesting that Logan Bruss is going to be playing tackle again. Started at tackle back in 2019. He was right tackle opposite Cole Van Lannen. Then 2020, they moved him into guard on the right side with Tyler Beach playing tackle. And then now they've got Bruss playing right tackle, Beach playing left tackle in the first group. And then on the inside, you've got Jack Nelson playing right guard, which is intriguing as well. Caden Lyles man in the center spot, and then Josh Seltzer at left guard. Concern's not the right word, because we've seen Logan Bruss be a very good right tackle. I'm just worried that, you know, a guy like Logan Brown, who really came on pretty strong and I thought played a really good game in the bowl game against Wake Forest, and admittedly, that was against a second string defensive end. You know, their guy that's probably going to get drafted first round, opted out early. But I just thought that Logan Brown looked like he was online to, you know, kind of cement that left tackle spot. Now, I don't know. Now it's really up. It seems like it's a legitimate 50-50 race between Tyler Beach and Logan Brown here in spring. And then whoever ends up losing, maybe they become the swing guy and is the backup both places, or I'm not sure how it's going to go, but I'm very surprised by that. And maybe it's just because Logan Bruss said, hey, I much prefer tackle, but I think that's kind of the position battle or a switch that to watch here on the offensive line.
Yeah, I was going to say too, it's, you know, I always hesitate because it's so early, you know, it's spring. We're talking April 14th right now. I think this is the time to play around with stuff if you're going to do it and try to figure out who fits best where. So, you know, talking about depth charts this early is always a little bit, you know, it's sketchy because come the second week of August, if this doesn't work, we've seen in the past where they've decided to just,
yeah, we'll go right back. Yeah.
They'll do it in the season once in a while. So, I like the idea of experimenting in the spring and maybe that's what this is.
Yeah. Logan Bruss even said that. He was just like, yeah, I've learned in spring to just expect everything because especially Joe Rudolph in particular is a guy that's going to experiment here and see where guys are at. And I was thinking about it watching practice on Tuesday. Like, it's got to stink to be an offensive lineman in spring practice because, like, you're not thinking about a defense. It's all about yourself. And you're going against your same defensive lineman every time. You're doing things that you've been – the same steps, the same plays over and over. And then not only that, you added the contact element of it too. I've got to imagine that part of it for offensive linemen gets really old in spring. So maybe in part of it is Joe Rudolph throwing guys at new spots that make them really kind of lock in and try to learn something new.
Yeah, I thought that not just for offensive line, but really every position. Like spring is, it's necessary and it helps in the long run. But for a player, I imagine with no carrot really dangling immediately in front of you. I mean, there's a carrot a long distance away, right? And you know it's helping you and you know these are important practices. But like you said, with no opponent there to get ready for, it just cannot be easy.
Yeah, it's strange. And you can tell that they're trying to manufacture some energy and trying to get things going, especially during the team sessions. And that's good. And I think that's something that we talked about on the podcast a few times last season. There seemed to be plays and series and things like that from this team that they're kind of dead. So maybe they recognize that and are trying to fix that. But when you look at this offensive line as a whole, there's just so much talent there. So many young guys that are 4 and 5 stars and are starting to prove themselves. I mean, Trey Wettig is getting the second team reps at right tackle and he's looking pretty solid there. Riley Mullman with a couple injuries is Logan Brown was out on Tuesday. So he was playing second team left tackle. And then you've got, you know, Nolan Rucci, top 15, top 20 recruit in the country coming in the fall. It's going to be an interesting battle, but I think we're going to learn a lot more about what Rudolph and the coaching staff thinks of where these guys should play when we start seeing first team reps in the fall, as opposed to right now. I agree with that. Yeah, for sure. All right. Last one on the football here. This one's from John on Facebook. Will Graham Mertz continue to have to run over to the sideline before every snap? We never got an explanation on why that persisted throughout the end of last year. Can we please tell me, or can we please hide our signals so that the dude doesn't have to run a marathon by the end of every game? Fair request. I would imagine that's going to happen. I think there's a two-part explanation here. I think one, when you had the new play caller situation with Joe Rudolph last season and the fact that the team was struggling as poorly, as much as it was. So there's step one. But then two, if your calls and your signals are out there, slow the game down, try to eliminate that factor as much as you can. And maybe I would love to just get some truth serum and Joe Rudolph and figure out the real answer here. Maybe it was just a situation to try to stall the game out because they knew the offense was struggling so bad. They had to make sure the defense got rest because they weren't going to put up enough points to really put a team away or anything like that down the stretch.
Yeah. I mean, I agree that the optics of it just looks bad, right? This is college football. This isn't a high school team. And I wish we would have gotten a better explanation. I'm fully on board with John on this one.
Same.
It just was kind of weird. I don't know what better word to use to describe it. It was definitely not the way it's always been done. And I just thought it was, from an optic standpoint, just kind of strange, bizarre.
Yeah, no, for sure. Actually, I lied. We have one more on football. Over-under, this is from Andy on Twitter. Over-under, 1,300 yards for Brady Shipper at running back this season. If you don't get the joke, which I saw a couple replies to the tweet saying that they did not get the joke, Brady Shipper has been basically the only healthy running back throughout spring practices so far. Jalen Berger, Julius Davis, Isaac Garendo, all these guys have been in and out of the lineup. Brady Shipper has been getting a lot of carries. And I got to say, looks pretty good for a guy that was playing safety last year.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be under 1,300 yards. I mean, if he gets 13 carries, some things have gone wrong. If you look at the lineup right now, he would be the guy that you trust most behind Jalen Berger if he's healthy. So kind of one of those weird spring developments that I can tell the Badgers coaches are like, boy, we need some running backs so we can actually do the things we want to do here in spring.
I was going to say, there's been at least one other year I can remember like this. I don't remember what exact year, but I remember they were really, really low on at tailback. And, you know, it makes it hard to do much of anything, right? I mean, that's kind of one of the problems with spring practice is that sometimes you have guys coming off injuries, and especially if one position gets hit, you're in a world of hurt, pun intended.
Yeah, combine it with graduations and guys maybe not early enrolling at that spot. You're just down to a few people. It was crazy. So, all right. A couple of basketball ones as we wrap up the show here. This is from Ron on Twitter. Does Badgers basketball plan to hire a full-time strength and conditioning coach?
Yes.
Yes, they do.
Ron's question is valid, though, because they have not posted that position, and I thought they would have. And I don't really have a reason for why they haven't. I can speculate that they have a lot else on their plate right now, and they haven't crossed that bridge yet. But it's mid-April, and spring or the summer session starts in about 2 months. So I would think they'd want to get that done soon. It also could mean that they have someone in mind, and
right,
the process is not going to take long beyond the official time they have to post it.
Yeah, especially if it's that candidate's internal, maybe somebody that they've seen around before. That can speed up the timeline there for them.
Yeah, and they also did start the interview process last year and had at least one external candidate in. So I don't know that, I don't know what happened there, if that was someone they liked that, that they would consider interviewing again. I don't know, but it would seem to indicate to me that they don't think this process is going to take real long.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so last one from the mailbag here. JMW1235 asks, what is your projected starting five for Wisconsin basketball next season? Jim just shook his head. JMW1235, he's not a fan of your question.
I appreciate the question, and I was going to respond directly on Twitter that he's not going to like my answer. I'm no closer to projecting a lineup than I was 3 weeks ago when I wrote the story kind of looking ahead to next season, and I think we talked about it a little bit on the podcast.
Yeah.
I just think, what I say today could change by Friday. Like if they land a graduate transfer that can come in and start immediately, I really hesitate to do this until the roster is set. And I don't believe necessarily that the roster is set. In 2 months I can have a better answer to this question. I mean, I think you can put Brad Davison in there, right? You can put Jonathan Davis and Tyler Wall. So there's three of your five, but without knowing whether they're going to add a veteran guard, without knowing whether they're going to add a veteran center, I just think it's premature to take a crack at, a projected starting five. And let me also throw out this caveat. The starting five doesn't matter, right? I mean, like, the rotation matters. Who ends the game matters. Who starts it doesn't really matter all that much.
I'm with you. I'm going to throw Steven Crowell in that kind of pencil in. And I'm saying that strictly because of who's on the roster now. Like you said, they land a graduate transfer big man or a transfer big man or something that maybe changes that. But I think if you're just looking at who's on paper on the roster right now, I think Crowell's your starting five.
I agree with that. April 14th, I would totally agree with that. And then I think the question becomes, does Chucky Hepburn come in and start immediately at point guard? Lauren Bowman is kind of the X, a little bit of an X factor. We don't know where he is in his development after being away most of the year. Point guard could be, Brad Davison has played there. Jonathan Davis could play a little bit there, I think, in a pinch. So do they go with kind of a different type of point guard, and then does Ben Carlson find a way into the lineup? You know, it's just, there's so much to be determined by this summer and what happens early in camp next year. It's just, there's so much time between now and whenever they start the season.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Last one. This is from me. There's no one answering or asking this question, but Jim got announced this week that he is going to be the new columnist here at the State Journal. How's it feel, Jim?
It's great. You know, I'm excited. It's a new challenge for me and I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a little something different, a little bit outside my comfort zone, but I think it's time in my career to do that. And I was just, as we were going through that last answer, I was going to say that all these basketball questions are not really going to be my problem once we hire a replacement for me, but I will still be, you know, I think once it gets closer to that, my actual starting date, which is going to be in, you know, late May, early June, we'll have a better idea of kind of what I'm going to be doing and stuff. But I will say that you're still going to see me, you know, write about UW men's basketball and UW football. That'll be a very big part of my job because that's going to be our number one priority, you know, at this paper. So I will still be around a lot.
Yeah. I'm excited. I gotta say, when OC said he retired, I was like, oh God, I hope Jim does this just cause I don't like having to meet new people and getting to know new people. Yeah. Now it's just a lot, selfishly, it's a lot easier for me, Jim. And that's what I'm looking forward to.
I'll just wait till my ego explodes, Colton. It might be a completely different person.
Fair enough. Get syndicated. Everybody's out there. See what happens. All right. For Jim Pulzine, I'm Colton Bartholomew. Thank you guys very much for listening.